a lot of how I envisioned my life and my career was based on becoming an entrepreneur because I was able to watch that. And that's such an awesome gift. You know, that's something I would love to find a way to give to more people who are growing up in a household where they don't have a parent who's an entrepreneur to be able to see that. It's something that I think being able to see it happen gives you so much faith and confidence in yourself and your ability to see it to make it happen for yourself, that that's something that I really would like to share with more people. Is it is possible. All you have to do is bet on yourself. There's nobody else that you would rather bet on. So that first step, that first leap is really, really scary and really hard to get over. But if you close your eyes and jump, you know, the next step is a little bit easier and the next step is a little bit easier and you can do it.
Hello and welcome everyone. I am Jory Calkins, the founder and CEO of Enduring Companies and the host of Built to Outlast, a podcast and community for business builders by business builders. We explore the journeys and companies of business builders in America with a focus on traditional small to mid-sized business niches and the strategies which enable them to endure and flourish. If you are building a business now or aspire to build one in the future, this is for you. To join the Built to Outlast community and access episodes, show notes, and other community resources to support your journey, please visit builttooutlast.com. If you have or know a business that may be sold and care who the buyer is, or if you want to buy or build a business and care who you do it with, please visit enduring.co to learn more about us, our long-term approach, and our holding company. Welcome, everyone. For our show today, we're speaking with Matt Hale, who is a good friend and the co-founder and president of Apex Dental Partners, which is a leading dental support organization based out of Dallas, Texas. Welcome to the show, Matt.
Thanks, Jory. Excited to be here. I love the pod.
I'm really excited to do this with you. We've known each other for a while, but I always learn something new even about folks who I'm close friends with. So I appreciate you taking the time and being on. Where we usually start these is just wherever you're comfortable, whether it's minute five or week five or month five or year five, but tell us or tell me about who you are, where you're from, how did things begin for Matt?
Well, I was born and raised in Tulsa, Oklahoma, which I think is very actually impactful to kind of my desire to be an entrepreneur and kind of life outlook. Oklahoma and Tulsa specifically is a very kind of entrepreneurial culture. You know, it's a big energy town. A lot of folks that have left bigger companies to start their own companies. And so, you know, early in my life, I kind of got to be firsthand witness to that. So my mom and my dad both were full-time employed in my early years. And so I got to see a lot of kind of their experience working as part of bigger companies. My dad early on, you know, was looking at going out on his own, starting his own thing. And I kind of got to experience his journey through that as part of my kind of formative years. So I think kind of where I grew up and what I got to see kind of from my parents' experience has a lot to do with kind of my worldview and, you know, where I decided to direct my energy early in my life. So
I'd love to learn more about that. What was that, you know, in retrospect, you probably observed one thing at that age and then in retrospect have processed it many different ways, but kind of how old were you when you first started recognizing that your dad was considering doing something that was, you know, maybe different, and what were the kind of like ups and downs or emotions or decision points you perceived when you were that age? And then in retrospect, is there anything that has been like added to that as you've layered more context as you've gotten older onto that experience?
So I was about 8 years old. My dad was at a privately held but very large energy company in Tulsa and was thinking about going out on his own. My mom had always worked full-time, but she left to take care of kids when my younger brother was born. And so she had recently kind of stopped working outside the home. So I can only imagine what the stress load was on him making that decision, you know, leaving a stable job at a big successful company as the sole breadwinner for our house. Kind of back up for just a second, kind of in their life, you know, my mom and my dad, I didn't really know or appreciate this obviously at that time, but you know, they had born and raised in Oklahoma, grown up in Oklahoma. Both of them put themselves through college. My mom went to OSU and my dad went to OU. So we kind of had that split in our house. That's right. And my parents, obviously that was, you know, very difficult, you know, working to pay tuition and going to class. So after my parents met and decided to get married, which was happened over the course of about 5 weeks, my mom dropped out of school to work to support my dad so that he could finish school. So they had put themselves through college and then had kind of pulled themselves up into, you know, what really was a very, you know, comfortable middle-class lifestyle by the time I was kind of in the picture and of an age to have consciousness of those types of things. So they had kind of come through that experience together. And I think that just kind of speaks to the partnership that they have. You know, they had always.
I was going to say, I didn't mean to interrupt, but what a great demonstration of like mutual trust and support and partnership, especially, you know, certainly for both of them, but particularly in that instance from your mom, being willing to, you know, do that to help, you know, support your dad. And then I'm sure vice versa in different times and situations.
Yeah. And really, you know, that was kind of my earliest demonstration of what a partnership was. You know, my parents have always been very supportive of each other, very equal in their partnership. They'll be celebrating 50 years of marriage here in a couple of years, which is really hard to believe.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But, you know, that I think that just speaks to what a partnership can be, which has really kind of been a theme, I think, throughout my experience to date, you know, working alongside my partner in Apex. So that was kind of my earliest demonstration of what a good partnership can look like. So they went through that experience, you know, had gotten themselves to the point where they had three kids and were very comfortable living, you know, stable middle-class lifestyle. And so I think it speaks to the kind of entrepreneurial drive of my dad and my mom to support him to do this, that he would, you know, leave that stable middle-class job in order to go out and, you know, take a chance and bet on himself. So when I was about 8 years old, he made that leap and left the company he was at to start his own. And the things I remember about that time are funny. So he left to start his company. My mom joined him to do a lot of the kind of operations work associated with that. So, you know, energy business, it's a lot of glamorous things. You think of, you know, wildcatting, going out on well sites and drilling wells, and you don't think about there's a lot of back-end non-glamorous doing reports and splits and all of the accounting that has to go into that. So a lot of that work that has to be done. So they teamed up and built that first company together. And I remember spending a lot of, you know, school holidays and Saturdays and Sundays in their office. I was a huge nerd, still am, obviously. But my focus at that time of my nerdity was cars. So I started a owners and enthusiasts club for Acura cars. And so I was, you know, on the extra computer in their office, corresponding with my nerd car friends about Acura cars, and, you know, writing letters to Honda about things they needed to address in this car. So that was my experience of it, was kind of just getting to be around a little bit while I was, you know, doing kid things, but hearing.
Was this in the office?
Yeah. Yep. In their office.
Oh, that's cool.
Their first office. So got to spend a lot of time around them while they were going through those early years, which gave me some kind of sense of the ups and downs of, you know, starting a company. That was kind of between the time I was 8 and 10 years old. And so I didn't really have an appreciation of what that meant, but I could tell that, you know, some weeks things were going really well and some weeks they weren't going so well. And so I started to kind of get an appreciation for that.
Have you ever, sorry to interrupt, but have you ever, certainly at like 8 to 10, you probably weren't asking these questions, but have you ever in retrospect asked them basically talking through what you just talked through and under, you know, hey, you guys worked really hard to get here. What was it that made you want to go there, you know, go to the next spot and take that risk? Have you ever had that conversation with them in retrospect?
Yeah. Yes, I have. You know, my dad and I talk about business and life pretty often, and I'm really fortunate to be able to have that resource. He saw in that a lifetime almost, right? He had a long time left in his career at that point of working really hard and not being happy because it wasn't what he wanted to do. You know, he got so much fulfillment out of building something greater than himself that he felt like that was something he needed to do. So it was kind of a, you know, you face these choices in life, these trade-offs where you can take the safe, stable path and you know what you're going to get, but that may not be something that really makes you fulfilled and happy. Or you can take the more risky route, but you have a chance to really stretch yourself and see what you can become. And just the act of doing that, I think, is very fulfilling for a lot of people. And I think it certainly was for him.
Man, I mean, I couldn't have said it better, but I also think you just summarized the whole podcast, basically. Yeah, that's awesome. And it's really cool that you are able to have those conversations with him, especially because you're on your own kind of building an entrepreneurial journey, which I'm excited to get to in a bit. But before then, you know, tell me, so 8 to 10, you're the Acura kingpin.
That's right.
You know, coordinating chat room. I don't know what it was when we were,
yeah,
you know,
the,
when you were 8 to 10.
The early days of the forums on the internet, you know.
Yeah, you're the Acura forum kingpin.
Right.
You know, what are your kind of next memories, either related to building and business or just, you know, personally that you feel like were kind of foundational for you?
So, you know, my parents built that first company, which really was a partnership, you know, between the two of them. And then they sold that company to what was effectively a small private equity backed platform. And that was kind of the beginning of the next phase of my dad's career. My mom decided to exit at that time and spend, you know, full-time focused on raising kids. My dad then got a new partner in that business, and the two of them built that platform up really from the time I was about 11 or so, really all the way through college. So there was a series of companies that they built and sold. So they would build these up, end up selling them to one of the majors, you know, large oil and gas company, and then they would start again with largely the same team. And so they had a lot of success doing that. And so my memories, you know, from that time are kind of watching things change for him and seeing their office get bigger, seeing meeting more and more team members, and kind of seeing that, you know, through that, he clearly was enjoying the journey and the challenge. There's clearly was still a lot of ups and downs and stress. You know, one of the major memories in my mind from that time was, you know, when I was about 14, I was on the soccer field one afternoon at my club soccer team practice. And my mom actually was one of the coaches for my team. So she was there. My dad didn't usually come to my soccer practices because they were early and, you know, he needed to stay at the office and finish his day. And his truck pulled up outside of our soccer field and just sat there. He had this hideous brown and orange striped truck. So it was very distinctive.
Very unique. Very unique.
Yes. Yes. So, you know, the 90s were an interesting time in a lot of ways. So he pulled up in that and was sitting there, and my mom saw him and he's like, well, what's he doing here? Why is he sitting in his truck? So she went over to check on him and she walked up to the driver's side, then walked around to the passenger side and got in the truck. And then I saw her walk back around to the driver's side and get back in the truck and then drive away. So I'm really confused at this point. What's going on, right? So the other soccer coaches, you know, say, hey, come on, let's keep going, let's finish practice. Come to find out later that, you know, my dad was driving home from work and had suffered a stroke while he was driving on the highway. And fortunately, he was still functional on one side of his body, so he could drive. He didn't run off the road, but he couldn't move the left side of his body. So he couldn't get out of the truck. So my mom took him to the hospital. We were fortunate that he was able to make a full recovery, but you know, a large part of what was driving turned out to be a series of mini strokes that led up to that stroke was stress. And you know, the doctors talked to him about he's got to manage his stress better or it literally was going to kill him. So I remember a lot around that time of kind of overhearing conversations with my mom and my dad about, you know, this is important. What you're doing is valuable, but it's not more important than your life, you know, your family. And my dad never had the attitude that it was, but you know, when you're in the trenches, you know, fighting the battle and you feel like everything's on you, it can be really easy to let that stress, you know, overtake and overcome your ability to enjoy and really partake in your personal life. You know, flash forward to COVID in our business, you know, that was the most stressful time I think hopefully I'll ever go through in my life. And that's one of the things that helped me get through that period was remembering that no matter what happened with this business, I had everything that I needed at home in order to be happy and fulfilled, even if our business didn't make it through COVID, which there was a time that it looked like it wouldn't. You know, I would keep going back to that experience and say, you know, I don't want to put my health at risk, put my family life at risk by wearing this on my completely on my shoulders. You know, it's going to work out. We're going to be able to get through it. And I'm going to try to take care of myself through this experience and not let what might be the death of my business be the death of me. So I think that was a very impactful time on me and impactful on my parents as well, because from that point forward, you know, my dad did a lot better job of managing his stress and not letting it get to the point where it was damaging to his health.
First of all, thank you for sharing that. Second of all, I think a lot of this is an observation and I've struggled with this too, but I think a lot of builders identify kind of self-worth and life often, you know, they're so focused on building, which sometimes you kind of have to be to build something meaningful. But that focus sometimes blends into identifying self and self-worth with whatever is being built. And it's hard, frankly, it's hard not to. And I've made that, you know, mistake in the past. What a kind of a miracle for your dad, one, to have it only be on one side of his body and to, you know, be able to pull the truck over. There's like a chain of miracles there that starting with that and like ending with, you know, you being able to observe that and then take that into your life 20 plus years later, when you're going through a similarly challenging time, to have that kind of gift from your parents in observing that and using that as kind of an even keel for you and your journey.
Yeah. Yeah. It was an incredible gift to be given to be able to watch both my parents go through this journey. It did not only kind of gave me these lessons to fall back on, but it also helped me to envision myself going down that path. So a lot of how I envisioned my life and my career was based on becoming an entrepreneur because I was able to watch that. And that's such an awesome gift. You know, that's something I would love to find a way to give to more people who are growing up in a household where they don't have a parent who's an entrepreneur to be able to see that. It's something that I think being able to see it happen gives you so much faith and confidence in yourself and your ability to see it to make it happen for yourself. That's something that I really would like to share with more people is it is possible. All you have to do is bet on yourself. There's nobody else that you would rather bet on. So that first step, that first leap is really, really scary and really hard to get over. But if you close your eyes and jump, you know, the next step is a little bit easier and the next step is a little bit easier and you can do it. If you're considering going and starting something, going out on your own, you already have the ability. And now you just need to take that first step.
Man, I feel like I need to like buy you a beer as an advocate for the podcast and the community in general. But this is great. That's some of the goal of the community we're trying to build, is to, for folks who haven't been necessarily blessed with a like front row seat like you'd been, to know that they can do it, to provide, you know, some of those stories and context. So I appreciate you, you know, sharing yours. So that's kind of around 14, at least for me, around 14, you know, I was, you know, I probably wasn't as observant as it sounds like you were. I was causing problems and trouble, and, you know, all that sort of thing.
A lot of it's in hindsight, you know.
But what, describe to me, you know, what came next for you on your journey, you know.
Yeah.
I guess at 14, you're kind of middle school, high school, starting high school age.
Yeah.
What was next?
Yeah. So part of that journey also kind of impacted me directly in terms of my opportunities and how I kind of progressed through school. So up through eighth grade, I went to a very large public high school in Tulsa called Jinx. Great school, definitely, you know, your, what you think of as your, you know, 5A, 6A giant class. I think there were 1,200 kids in my class. I had a lot of friends who were in different schools around the city. I was, mentioned being a nerd, I was a jazz band nerd also. So I played jazz saxophone and had some friends.
Learn something new every time I do one of these.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So I had some friends that were at a an arts magnet program at Tulsa Central High School. Tulsa Central was a very old kind of inner city urban school, not in a very high income part of town. And so very, very different from Jinx and kind of the environment that I had been in. But they had this great magnet program at the time that I had some friends that were in from the jazz world. And I was really excited about it. I thought it'd be really cool and fun. So I ended up convincing my parents to let me transfer to go to this magnet program my freshman year of high school. And that was such a great experience in hindsight. It was not a great environment academically, to be blunt, but I got such a good life experience out of being pulled out of my element that, you know, had been my whole life to that point, and being put in a totally different environment and context. So I got 2 months into the school year, and due to some redistricting and city or school board politics that were going on, they ended up shutting down the arts program that I had transferred there to take advantage of and moving it to another school. But I didn't have the opportunity to move to the other school with it. So in an instant, everything I'd come there for was gone. And what was left was a school that did not have a lot going for it academically, and honestly had a lot of kids who had a very different background than I did, and were more responsible for their own future than honestly I had been to that point. You know, I had the great fortune of growing up with my parents who, while they were on this journey, were also great parents that were telling me, you do your best and you're going to do well. You know, you're going to go to college. We're going to pay for you to go to college. And I had honestly probably just taken that for granted to that point in my life of that was the path and that was taken care of. And now I was surrounded by people who, a lot of them had one parent at home. A fair number of them didn't have any parents and they were living with somebody else or a grandparent or something like that. And most of my friends there were not on a path to go to a four-year university at least. And if they were, you know, it was going to be through a combination of aid and them working themselves through the way my parents did. And that was really the first time that I had an appreciation for how much I had been blessed with opportunity and privilege to go to the school that I had gone to through that point and have been making progress every year academically without really thinking about it or worrying about it, to be honest. So that experience gave me just such an appreciation for how much context matters. You know, I had very, very, very little of it going into that year. And I came out of that year with a lot more and a lot more appreciation of how much I was blessed by having the opportunity to go to school every day and have an effective learning environment. So went through that year, gained a lot of life experience, not a lot academically, went back to Jinx, the big public high school. For my sophomore year, I had a lot of friends who were at a private school in Tulsa that was much, much smaller, much more academically rigorous. And, you know, it was something I was interested in because it was different and it seemed neat and they really liked it. And I'd been asking my parents about that through the latter part of my year at Tulsa Central. And they were not to a point in their career where that was something they could afford. It was more expensive school and was a challenge. And so, you know, it wasn't something that really made sense for, you know, our family at that point. During that sophomore year, when I was back at Jinx, they had one of their first big exits out of that business and were then able to send me to the school's named Holland Hall, to Holland Hall. And what a eye-opening experience that was for me. I had now seen, you know, two environments, Jinx, huge public high school, a whole array of kind of kids who were headed to Ivy League or kids who were headed to state schools, kids that were not going to college. You know, it was all there because the class was so big. But within my kind of close circle there, there was a very, I would say, similar trajectory that was, you know, doing okay in school, going to go to a decent university, but probably not going to the Ivy League. And when I made that transition to Holland Hall, I was suddenly surrounded by a whole bunch of people that were headed to, you know, the most elite schools in the country that were very, very focused on performance academically and were performing at a level much higher than what I'd ever been around or been expected to do. And so, you know, I very quickly realized I was going to have to put in a lot more work than I ever had before. And I'm really glad that I went through that experience because I think that really set me up for realizing that, you know, I was going to have to work hard in college and I was going to have to work harder if I wanted to get where I wanted to go of being able to have this opportunity to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to put myself in the best position possible. And so I kind of got that opportunity through that experience.
I'm sure when you were in it, it felt like chaos. But
it did.
But one observation is how awesome of your parents to let you kind of advocate for and then make and own that first decision. But then also how kind of serendipitous the outcome where you were able to hop in a few different environments and have the EQ and IQ to realize the context of the different situations you were in and kind of internalize that. I'm not telling you anything you didn't know, but I understand why you shared that as a formative experience. Certainly, that seems pretty foundational to me.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like I said, it just gave me such an appreciation for, you know, the gifts I'd been given and the opportunity that I had and helped me to put myself in a position where when I got to college, you know, I was ready to take on more. I was ready to really pour myself into my classes. And I don't think I would have been that way if I hadn't been through the latter part of that experience, because I would have expected it to be a little easier and that it would all work out. And, you know, instead, I really poured myself in and tried to do the most I could do. So, you know, I ended up getting four different degrees in my undergrad program because I wanted to do more. And so I definitely don't think I would have gone down that path if not for that experience.
So it sounded like that was formative and kind of catalytic in a handful of different ways. So how did you take that forward? It sounded like in undergrad, you know, that translated into academic kind of rigor and achievement. And then how did that translate into both kind of during undergrad and otherwise? What, you know, how did that translate into how you spent your time and what you decided to do?
Well, so in undergrad, I knew that I wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I didn't know what that really was going to look like. So I wanted to kind of get a well-rounded education. My parents had always encouraged me, like, get an engineering degree. Doesn't matter what you want to do, it's going to teach you to think a certain way, and that's going to be valuable. So I did. One of my majors was engineering management information systems, which my wife, Christy, is constantly telling me is not real engineering. So I can't say it's an engineering degree. She's a civil engineer. So she's, you know, a real engineer.
That doesn't seem like a very civil comment for a civil engineer.
Agreed. But, that gave me an opportunity, I think, to realize that there's a whole lot of things that I didn't know as I started to get into that career, into that major. So I started kind of adding on other kind of areas of exploration at that point. So, you know, I started taking some finance classes. I'd always been interested in economics, so I started taking some economics classes. And then I wanted to do something just different. It's very closely related to all these fields, but it felt very different, which was math. So I ended up kind of pushing down all of those paths. I stayed an extra year, did a victory lap to finish all four, but ended up getting all four of those degrees, which, again, I think just gave me a lot of context that I probably wouldn't have had.
Is that like a major, four different majors?
Yeah. Yeah. So wow. I've got a math, economics, finance, and then engineering degree from SMU.
All the soft stuff. You went for all the soft stuff.
That's right. That's right.
Wow. We've known each other for a long time. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was a lot of fun. You talk about serendipity. Yeah. I was kind of headed down this path before I met Christy, my wife, but she was a year behind me and stayed to do a master's degree as well. So had I not been headed down that road, I wouldn't have done an extra year. And had I not done that victory lap, you know, our overlap would have been a lot smaller. And I, you know, don't know what would have happened, but because I was there, you know, our relationship started to blossom kind of late in what would have been my senior year and really grew over the course of my victory lap. So it's amazing how kind of that serendipity factor comes into play.
Sounds like the victory lap was well worth it. And a victory lap on multiple fronts.
Yes, yes. Yeah, very much, very much. So
got it. So you're completing your victory lap. You've got four pieces of paper in your hand, which is probably more than anyone else. Certainly that's the most degrees I've ever heard of. That's kind of amazing. And then, you know, you can probably do a bunch of things and go a bunch of different directions. What did you do next and kind of how and why? What was your kind of thought process at that point?
Yeah. So again, I knew at that point that I ultimately wanted to be an entrepreneur, but I had no idea how to get there. I certainly wasn't one of these people that's ready to start a company in undergrad or right out of undergrad. I think that's amazing when people feel they're ready at that point. I wasn't. I felt like I needed some experience, that I just didn't know what I wanted to do, even though I knew what I wanted it to kind of ultimately look like. So as I was looking around, I was kind of considering, okay, what are the careers that are going to challenge me, that are going to give me the opportunity to learn, that are going to put me in a position where I can kind of take that next step. It was really during that last year of undergrad that I started to kind of form a plan. I'm a planner. I really like having a plan. I like things going to a plan, which I think is a really important thing in entrepreneurship generally. So kind of that year, I came to the plan of I'm going to marry what was my girlfriend at that time, Christy. I'm going to go and do investment banking where I can have a really rigorous finance experience and understand how to raise money and, you know, how financial math works in practice. I'm going to go into private equity to understand how you buy a company and what that's like. And then I'm going to go to business school and then I'm going to do this entrepreneurship thing. And really, I mean, as much as that sounds kind of crazy, that was the plan that I came to. So I got a summer internship at Merrill Lynch in Houston doing energy and power investment banking, which was kind of perfect because it was something I felt like I knew a little bit about from being around my dad and, you know, him growing energy companies through the course of my life. It was in Houston instead of in New York. So it was closer to Christy at SMU and it just felt more accessible to me. So I got that summer internship, got the full-time offer. And then at the end of that year, when I went to New York for training, Christy came up for a weekend to visit me. And I remember very clearly having a conversation with her that weekend where I shared this plan with her. And she was not quite ready for that plan at that moment. I think she was a little taken aback by the suggestion that we were going to get married and then have all these things planned out for our lives. So it took her a minute to digest that. But, you know, that really kind of laid the foundation for really what the next, 6 years of our life looked like together. So we did end up getting married, a little bit after that. Did end up doing investment banking at Merrill Lynch, which became Bank of America, and then joined a private equity firm, which was a great experience. Really fortunate to have had that experience. And then fortunate to get into MBA program, where I had the pleasure of meeting you, Jory, and several other people that we're close with. And really, all of that became a really foundational to my life and my career.
It sounds like the plan kind of happened. Certainly, there's always kind of divergence around the path a little bit, but it sounded like the plan kind of worked. And
very much,
Christy might not have been on board on day one, but sometimes the most important and best sales cycles are a little bit longer. So
that's right. Exactly. Yeah. I really, again, to the power of a plan, it really did work out like almost shockingly to the blueprint. I think kind of that experience has helped me to be unapologetic about planning. So, when we were starting Apex, to kind of flash forward a little bit, I wrote a very long, very detailed business plan, which was not a cool thing to do, at that point. It's much more startup and, a slide deck and raise money and, we're going to go make this happen. We're going to end up pivoting anyway. So why write a business plan that's so 1990s? But that was an incredibly useful and powerful thing for me and for my partner to really envision a plan that spans multi-years, get it down on paper, refine it. And, here we are, we're 10 years into Apex, and it's really gone very much according to that plan, which is, again, kind of shocking, but also I think speaks to the power of, what having a plan can do for you as an entrepreneur. It's so easy to get lost in the day-to-day, in the weeds. And you have to be somebody that's willing to get into the weeds to be successful as an entrepreneur, I think. But you also have to be somebody who can zoom out, and go from the 1 foot to the 10,000 foot. And that's a hard transition, at least for me. I mean, maybe it comes natural to some people, but for me, that's a really hard transition. So having a written plan where when I'm in 10,000 foot mode, I can write this plan, I can go through all the steps and envision it on the scale of years, helps me to be able to move out, when I'm on a Wednesday and I've been, in the weeds 100% for 3 days, to take a step back and say, okay, where are we at? What do we need to accomplish this week? What do we need to accomplish this quarter? What do we need to accomplish this year in order to go and make the plan, happen? And for me personally, I don't know how you do that without having something to fall back on and help you kind of make that transition.
Yeah, it's an interesting observation that I think something that is not always appreciated about building organizations or a business is that often that person needs to, or those people need to be able to have do this, zoom, know the big goal and what's the 10, 20 year vision, but then zoom between that and the, okay, what needs to get done today, and be pretty facile in being able to do that on a regular basis. So it's interesting, but not surprising that you had the self-awareness to know that that was going to be challenging and kind of build the muscle memory to be able to create some of these tools to help enable you to do that super effectively.
Yeah. Honestly, that wasn't the goal at the time. I didn't know that's what it was going to be. I thought, well, this is what I need in order to go raise money and be credible and be able to answer questions. So I was writing it for a purpose, or we were writing it for a purpose. But it turned out that the purpose was, yes, it served that purpose because we were able to answer every question that came up through our fundraising effort because we had thought about it, because we had to write this document. But it turns out that it also served as a really good guide for us, at least for the first 10 years of, how the business would grow and develop over that time.
Yeah. So it sounds like a pretty significant investment of time and effort. Can you rewind back maybe like 3 to 6 months before you all wrote that document, and how How did you and David connect up? How did you, who's your partner in Apex? How did you decide that, you know, a dental support organization was where you all wanted to go as opposed to an Acura chat room, you know, whatever the next version of that is? What was the 3 to 12 months that led up to going all in and making that investment of time, money, effort, and opportunity cost into that document and what that document meant?
Again, serendipity played a big role here. I had gone through investment banking, made it through the gauntlet that is investment banking. I was really fortunate to have that experience. I also was really glad when it was over. So, you know, the best formative experiences, I think, are that way. So when I made that transition from investment banking into a private equity analyst role, I went to a firm here in Dallas called Brazos Partners, which was really, really fortunate in a lot of ways. It was a great experience. But the most impactful part of that was my partner, David, was also there. And so we became peers, colleagues at that time, you know, working on businesses and opportunities on behalf of Brazos. And so it was really through our time together there that we formed a relationship. And we had, you know, a lot of, I would say, shared kind of values and outlook. David grew up in Oklahoma too, coincidentally. And so, you know, I don't know if it's in the water or what, but we both had a desire to be an entrepreneur and to build something. And so, you know, we spent a lot of time late nights at the office, where we'd take a break from whatever it was we were doing and talk about what we wanted to do ultimately. At that time, we were really interested in this concept of a search fund, which is, you know, a fund that young entrepreneurs raise to go out and find a business to buy, as you well know. And, you know, we were thinking about, okay, well, you know, if we did that, you know, what kind of business would we look for? What do we have particular skills in? Which really at that time, we had no particularly applicable skills. You know, we had some broad basic experience, but no particular skill in any individual business. And so it's really through that experience that we started to form our partnership. And so as my time at Brazos came to an end and I started to transition to Stanford to do my MBA, we kind of got serious about, okay, what is the path that we're going to take here? And it was really in my first year in business school that we decided that we were going to do something together. We thought at that time it was a search fund. And, you know, David had been on the fence about whether or not he was going to go back and go to business school or not. And so we had a mismatch. And, you know, he would have been a year behind me if he had started business school as soon as he could at that point. He decided that he was going to do the one-year program at Kellogg in order to align our graduation dates. And that was really kind of what solidified it. You know, I knew that he was serious about it. He knew that I was serious about it. And, you know, from
good
that
partnership.
Point forward, yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean, honestly, I think partnerships are so incredibly powerful when they are a good partnership and when they're tended to well. And certainly that's been the case for us, you know, over 10 years now. You know, our partnership is as strong as ever. And, you know, we have accomplished a lot more together than I think either one of us, you know, or at least would be confident in saying we would have done apart. You know, the biggest thing, not to go completely down the rabbit hole on partnerships, but, you know, the biggest thing is it gives you a counterbalance, somebody to help you get through, you know, those challenging days and challenging weeks. There are so many times, you know, even today, we fortunate to have achieved some success and grown the business to the point where the ups and downs are smaller relative to the base than they were early on. But, you know, you still have that emotional roller coaster effect where when you're having a bad week, bad month, you know, it just feels so challenging. And when you've got a partner, not all the time, but a fair amount of the time, when you're feeling that way about the business, they're actually seeing opportunity. And so you start to balance each other out and the lows aren't quite so low. Sometimes the highs aren't quite so high, but that's a small price to pay, I think, for the lows being not quite so low.
So you know, you're jumping in together. You've maybe at this point decided on the dentals, may or may not have decided on the dental space. What brought you to the dental space? And then tell me about the, you know, first one or two, you know, practices that you all found and got involved with.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, as we were kind of going down this road of a search fund, we were looking at different industries, trying to figure out, okay, where are we going to focus our search? You know, what thesis do we want to raise money around? And it was really through that experience that we kind of stumbled onto the dental industry. So David's wife, Layla, is a dentist, and she was a couple years out of school at that point. She had been in a large national dental group and had really enjoyed a lot of aspects of that experience. It is a quasi-branded group. So they're running, you know, offices in strip malls. You know, their average doctor tenure is less than 2 years.
This is where Layla was working?
Yeah, this was Layla's first job out of school. So this was her first job as a dentist. And so through that experience, she realized that, okay, I don't want to be in a branded retail dentistry model, you know, where you kind of have some of these drawbacks of, you know, it being very new patient focused, very short relationships with patients. On average, they came one time, and, you know, very high turnover of staff and dentists alike. But I really liked that there was good support on the business side. So I had people who took care of the HR aspects, the accounting aspects, you know, the insurance negotiations, you know, all the things that go into running this healthcare business. So, you know, where can I find something that takes care of all that, but also gives me the private practice experience that I became a dentist to practice in? You know, speaking as Layla here, grew up around, you know, a neighborhood dentist who was part of our community, who saw multiple generations of families, had those very long-term relationships, and really held those traditional values of, you know, treat people right and they'll keep coming back. How can I find that aspect and blend it with the support that I liked, you know, from this experience, where I didn't have to be, you know, the end all be all of dealing with every little single thing, you know, that comes up in running a small business, because that just wasn't what she wanted to do. And so it's really through kind of their dinner table conversation that trying to help her find what her path was going to be as a dentist, that we got interested in this space. And we said, well, why doesn't that exist? You know, why isn't there something that blends the best of both worlds, if you will, you know, private practice environment focused on those long-term patient relationships, being a part of the community, you know, having tenured staff and, you know, really supporting the dentist and being the leader in the practice with the support services that really, you know, only a larger organization can put together and, you know, have world-class HR, accounting, insurance negotiations, you know, supplies, all those things that organization did really well because they had scale and they were well-run. So it was kind of through that conversation, you know, their dinner table conversation became our lunch table conversation. And we started looking into that industry. And what we found at that time was a really interesting demographic picture. You know, you really had, if you look at a population graph, you know, on the right, you had the baby boomer bulge and then a thin part and then a bulge on the left. In dentistry, the baby boomer bulge was much, much larger because of a well-timed, for us at least, boom and bust in dental school enrollments. So you had a really large cohort of older practitioners who were, call it, within 10 years of retirement. You had not a lot of people in the middle at all. And then you had a growing cohort of younger practitioners coming into the industry. And what we found is that a lot of those younger practitioners were more like Layla than they were like the older cohort. You know, the older cohort was really focused on hanging their own shingle, very entrepreneurial driven, really did not mind, you know, the workload that came with managing a small business. Whereas the younger cohort, what we found was there was a lot more desire for work-life balance, a lot more focus on, you know, I want to have a great career that's fulfilling, that's financially rewarding, but I don't want to put in the nights and weekends in order to kind of run my own practice and take the risk that comes with that. So the kind of core of the idea started from her experience and saying, you know, we can build a bridge between these two populations and solve problems on both sides, you know, for the older cohort, giving them a reliable path towards retirement, giving them security and knowing that their patients and their team is going to be well taken care of. And on the younger end, giving them an opportunity to practice in a true private practice environment with the support of that only a large organization can provide.
It sounds like a great plan, but I know that the plan happened, but what's the next step? How did it go from that plan to, you know, what was the first one, or how do you go from zero to one in that scenario?
So, you know, it was really my second year of business school that we wrote the business plan. And through that experience, we got really excited and really jazzed up, really ready to go make it happen. So it was also useful in that regard because, you know, first-time entrepreneurs raising money for the first time, like, we had to bring our enthusiasm because there were a lot of no's, you know, of that's not for me, or, you know, that sounds like a nice idea, but I'm involved in other things right now that we ran into, of course, you know, it's just part of the journey, right? And so it was a good thing that we had lots of energy and lots of enthusiasm because we just plowed through those no's until we got enough yeses. So we wrote the business plan, decided this is what we're doing. And right after graduation, we started making phone calls, started trying to raise money. You know, it was a great time to raise money. So that was a tailwind. But I do also think that the plan and the fact that we had gone through all of that, which again, you know, I don't think is at that time was all that common. You know, you had a lot of entrepreneurs who were raising money on an idea, which this was very much an idea, don't get me wrong, but it did have a lot of thought and a lot of planning behind it. So we were fortunate that we were able to raise money over the course of that summer. We closed that first round of funding August 1st of 2014 and started operations, which really meant that, you know, we bought two laptops and moved back to Dallas. We took up residence in my in-laws' kitchen table as our first office and started figuring out what we were doing. So the way we split things up and have since the beginning is, you know, David's really in charge of getting the right people in the bus, is how we talk about it. So he's over affiliations and clinical recruiting, and I'm in charge of driving the bus. So I'm over operations, finance, accounting, IT, you know, basically everything else. And so, you know, those early days were a lot of calling dentists, doing networking events, trying to go from zero to one. And I can tell you, when you're trying to find dentists to partner with, when they ask the question, you know, well, how many practices do you work with? And the answer is, well, none yet. That's usually the end of the conversation. So that zero to one was really, really challenging. You know, we were fortunate to find an opportunity. It was an unfortunate opportunity, but a good opportunity for us. A local dentist had passed away unexpectedly, and you know, his widow was trying to figure out what to do with the practice, and we were looking for a practice. So what we ended up doing was affiliating with that practice. Layla stepped in to become the dentist, and I stepped in to become the office manager. And that was how we got our start. That's how we went from zero to one with the answer to that question, which was an infinitely better answer. So from that point, you know, we were up and running, and you know, it was
all
a great
hands
thing.
On deck.
That's right. It was a great thing because it gave us the opportunity to really learn the business from the ground up. So, you know, I started learning how to check patients out, how to appoint patients, how to get the right appointment times, you know, all the things that come with running a dental office front desk. And, you know, Layla really started making the transition from working in a very kind of high turnover, heavily new patient model to a private practice environment where these patient relationships had spanned decades, you know, with their prior dentist. So it was a great experience, a great start for us getting started. And, you know, the amazing thing is now 10 years later, Layla still works in what is the successor to that practice. They've got a new building and, you know, three other dentists in the office, but it's the same practice, the same patient base. So really cool to kind of see that grow and develop over the years.
That's awesome. So obviously that practice has grown, but I think also the, you know, over the that 10 years, Apex has grown too. So, you know, from 0 to 1, what is 1 to where are you all at now generally, you know, in terms of what you've been able to build up?
You know, from 0 to 1 was definitely the hardest in terms of kind of making the pitch and convincing Dennis why they should trust us with their life's work and livelihood, really. And from 1 to N was a lot easier and you know, started to get easier over the years as we could have, you know, a very clearly demonstrable track record of success. So we affiliated our second practice in March. So the first one in December, second one in March, and then did another one later that year. And really from that point, you know, we've been growing mostly with individual affiliations. We've done a few multi-practice deals where we brought in groups that were already put together and brought them onto the Apex platform. But for the most part, it's been individual practices that we've brought in. So we've done 57 of those to date. We've consolidated some of those into bigger locations to help give them more resources in their office. So we've got 45 physical locations today across 3 states. We're entering our 4th state here week after next with our next deal. And so, you know, we're about 700 employees overall, 100 dentists, and still growing really fast, still having a lot of fun doing it. So it's been quite the ride.
That's awesome. Well, congrats on both a successful, but also what seems like a fun journey. Are there any takeaways from the journey from those 10 years that you didn't expect, either the upside or the downside, or, you know, kind of learnings from that as folks that are thinking about either building or considering partnership? Any learnings on that front? Aside, you've already shared a bunch. So, you know, if the answer is there's nothing else, that's also totally reasonable. But anything you'd share from that journey that you think is helpful for folks?
Yeah. You know, we touched on partnerships, but I think that's such a, it can be such a great thing or such a bad thing, depending on if it's well-constructed and well-tended to. You know, I would say the things that have allowed our partnership to be so impactful in a positive way is that we had and continue to have very candid conversations about expectations and about, you know, where we want things to go. So, you know, when we were talking about becoming partners and starting this business, you know, we talked a lot about who would do what and how we would do it and what the expectations of each other would be. And that is so valuable. You know, I think if you go into one of these relationships and the expectations aren't clear, you're setting yourself up for a very bad situation. The other thing is, you know, tending to these relationships. You know, it's not unlike a marriage. It needs work. You have to be willing to, you know, sit down and have a conversation about, you know, something that's come up that you're not happy about. And at the same time, you've got to be willing to go and praise your partner and tell them, hey, that was awesome. You did such a great job. It's got to be something that you put the energy and the effort into, make it a positive relationship and make it something that can have a positive impact. If you do that, I think your average level of success is more than 2 times higher, right? If you think about where it needs to be 2 times higher if you're going to be splitting kind of the opportunity with someone, so to speak. And I truly believe if you set a partnership up right, you tend to it well, you know, there's just such an opportunity for you to balance each other out, which makes the emotional journey so much easier, but also, you know, to cover each other's missing spots. So I've got spots that are weaknesses where David is really strong. And likewise, he's got spots that are weaknesses where I'm really strong. And so, you know, together, we're so much better positioned to be successful than we are individually. And I think that is a great argument for why starting a company with a partner, buying a company with a partner is such a good thing if you set it up and you do it the right way.
This is a little bit of maybe a stretch, but I feel like good plans also enable good partnerships. Because if you're kind of forces thought, it forces transparency, it forces, you know, alignment, that sort of thing. So let me know if you think that's a stretch. Maybe I'm making that up, but
not at all. I mean, honestly, we had so many conversations about what the path of the business was going to be as a result of having to write it down on paper that it forced us to align our expectations and to have some of those more detailed conversations about who was going to do what and exactly how they were going to do it. So I think those two things are very, very much intertwined. It can be very hard to have a conversation about, you know, what role each of you is going to play if you don't know what the play is going to be, so to speak, right? You know, if you've got the screenplay, you can have conversations about who's going to do what and, you know, how you're going to do it. If you don't have that, you know, you really don't have anywhere to start on having that conversation.
This has been great. I want to make sure I'm respectful of your time. But before I ask the closing question that I ask everyone, I'd love to hear, you know, briefly about what's next for Apex. You guys have obviously built something impressive, but you're obviously a planner too. And so there must be some plan or some thought for what's next for you all. What's on the horizon for what you all are building?
We have really gotten to the point where we have a lot of our systems and our processes down, which is really exciting. I mean, it's taken 10 years, so it's kind of amazing how long it takes to really get to the point where you feel like you've got a lot of these things down, but we're really getting there, which I'm excited about. You know, that really gives me confidence in going and partnering with more dentists and growing the business significantly over the coming years. Our industry has developed in an interesting way. There's been a lot of startups that have grown very quickly that are in a lot of cases lacking a lot of infrastructure. And I know that a lot of those are filled with great people and great dentists who, you know, they need more structure. They need a better platform to work within to really achieve their potential. And so I'm really hopeful that we're going to find great opportunities within those groups over the next couple of years and really grow Apex, you know, significantly in size from here and bring the benefits of, you know, both our platform, but also our approach to those dentists. So, you know, it's the great thing about being in this business is, you know, it is a people business. It is a service business. So at the end of the day, if we do our job well, it means that we end up with more fulfilled, happier, more successful partners. And, you know, what greater job than that to be able to play a role in the success of, you know, so many people that are really dedicating their lives and their careers to serving others through healthcare. So I'm really excited about where we are and excited about the opportunity for growth in the years ahead.
The last question that I ask everyone that's on as a guest is a two-part question. It's kind of goofy, but modeled after the, you know, take a penny, leave a penny dish at a gas station, but oriented towards our community of current or aspiring builders. First, in terms of leaving a penny, is there a tip or a trick or, you know, an insight or a book or a habit that you have had that you'd share with our audience that you think is helpful or would be helpful to them? And then the second part of the question is the flip of that. So, you know, is there something our audience could help you with?
They say that good artists copy and great artists steal, right? So I'm gonna channel that here and share the most impactful piece of advice that I've gotten over the last 10 years. It's not a business trick, but truly has had a great impact on my life. And that's the concept that work is gaseous. So it expands to fill the space you give it. So if you don't set a container and fill the container, work is going to expand to fill every corner of your life. If you set the size of the container and you fill the container, you'll not only be happier and a better husband, wife, father, mother, but I think you'll actually be more productive. You know, I made this transition about 5 years into our experience building Apex, which was about 5 years too late, but I'm so glad I did because, you know, it's allowed me truly to enjoy the experience more and be what I want to be as a husband and as a father, while also being what I want to be as an entrepreneur and a leader. So I think it's a really powerful concept.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to have to throw the challenge flag on Christy that you're not an engineer because you just gave a very chemistry and physics answer. But that's great. Thank you for sharing that. And then what is something that with respect to Apex or otherwise that you're working on or building that our audience could help you with?
As I've shared, we're really excited about, you know, the platform that we have built here at Apex and the opportunity to help more dentists be more successful. And so, you know, if there are dentists out there, whether you're an owner or not, and you be interested in getting in touch and understanding what the benefits of joining Apex would be for you. Would love for you to get in touch, hi@apexdp.com. And hygienists, office managers, dental assistants, anybody else who's interested in building a career as part of a company that has a mission and lives by values, we would love to hear from you, careers@apexdp.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks for coming on, Matt. We've known each other for a long time, and I've learned numerous new things about you that are fun and interesting and not surprising to me, because I know who you are as a person, but you know, make a lot of sense to me. So I appreciate you sharing all of it.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Thanks everyone for joining us. We hope you enjoyed the episode. To join the Built to Outlast community and access episodes, show notes, and other community resources, please visit builttooutlast.com. If you have or know a business that may be sold and care who the buyer is, or want to build a business and care who you do it with, please visit enduring.co to learn more about us, our long-term approach, and our holding company.